Hello, Bonsai friends. This is Evan Pardue of Underhill Bonsai, and welcome to episode 96 of Little Things for Bonsai People, the podcast show. And it is the year 2024. It is September-ish right now at this time of this recording. because this will be out a couple weeks from now.
Oh, great.
Yeah. And we're seeing a little bit of fall color here. I always have to mention the weather a little bit, but this time I am joined by one of my show hosts, Carmen Lesko-Bianski. How's it going today, Carmen?
It is going well. Thank you very much for asking.
Yeah, going well. And today we're going to be talking to Carmen a good bit about herself and about her bonsai journey and where she has been and where she's going, because this week is
the last week of my apprenticeship.
Yep. So at this moment, right now we're recording, you have like, what, 2 days?
Yeah, basically? I have the rest of today and tomorrow. And I mean, technically I have Saturday, but that'll mostly just be packing. So really I have like a day and a half to finish all the work that I have been putting off.
Yeah. I mean, even the tree you showed me that you were working on today, is that one of the last projects or the last big project?
That's like the last full project I have to do. And then I've got a list of like, you know, I have to make an adjustment on this tree and I have to finish that tree. And I have to just like, I have to rewire a top of one thing, like, you know, little stuff.
Just little nitpicky things. But I mean, it's, I'm sure there's a lot of, I mean, I'm even a little emotional right now for you, you know.
It makes me anxious to
talk about it because I'm like, wait. You know, maybe you're a little bit more cool about it.
I just am not thinking about it. So, like, this is the thing I'm working on today. Like, I got to get that done. And then the other things, if I don't finish them, like, I will be full of shame. But it's not the end of the world, you know? Like,
yeah.
It'll be fine.
Yeah. So we'll get this episode in for you so you can talk about your experiences leading up to how you feel now. And this will be a good photo, like a capture of how you are now versus how you're going to come out on the other end. And this is the other end of the apprenticeship. So we'll kind of go through that. So we're going to do our intro like we normally do, and we're going to get into it. So before we get into talking to Carmen about the ending of her apprenticeship and the future for what that might hold for her, we do need to mention that our podcast is sponsored by our amazing patrons over at patreon.com/littlethingsforbonsaipeople. Head on over there and become a bonsai best bud. And you can hang out in the Discord and chat with these amazing people. And if you want to hear your name on every episode, we do that at the end of each episode now. So we have a featured best bud we always talk about right at the beginning that will just loud cap for them. It's going to be David J. Bertoncini. David
Bertoncini.
But it's not Bach. It's B-E-R-T-O-N-C-I-N-I. We've been saying it wrong.
Oh, well.
It's okay.
Sorry, man.
That's what we do. David.
It's kind of our thing.
J. Bertoncini.
Bertoncini. I'm sorry. I know. He even said, like, you don't have to do the Italian. I just like doing the Italian.
It works. And then, of course, we have our main show sponsor, Joshua Roth Tools. Thank you, John of Joshua Roth, for supporting our show and giving us the extra things that we need to make our bonsai scholarship, the Little Things Scholarship, more amazing by supplying tools, so Japanese tools that will go along with the credit that will go towards the Little Things Scholarship. By the way, we do have 3 people and counting so far that have applied for their scholarship, so that's really exciting. Me and Carmen will be reviewing those bonsai stories and goals here really soon. Once, of course, after this episode launches and Carmen gets settled, we will be very close to episode 100, and we'll go in and announce the winner and also announce what and we're going to go ahead and talk about episode 100 at the end here. So if you are interested in participating in being part of our episode 100, our big 100, stick around towards the end of the episode here to see what's going to be happening. And then I can't go much further without mentioning our Matt, the editor.
Our Matt
O'Donnell, O'Donnell. Iron Matt O'Donnell. Sorry. He got onto me early on about getting that wrong, but we're going to get it right this time. We can't go much further without Matt mentioning Matt, our editor. Makes us sound smart, cleans up all our audio, makes us enjoyable to listen to. Go over to mattodonnell.com, fill out a contact form to start your own podcast show or an audio engineering project with him. He's a set basis living in Nashville, Tennessee, and he's an all-around awesome guy. It's in the script to say it every single time. So for you, Carmen, how do you feel right now?
You know, it's funny because I've mostly been trying not to feel anything.
Well, that's one way to manage your feelings.
I'm just going to push them all down to the bottom.
Yeah.
I don't want to cry on our show.
I mean, if you did, it would be a great canon moment, but no pressure.
Crap.
You're good. Take your time.
So today has been the first day I have felt sad about leaving because it's the first time I let myself feel anything about leaving. But I am also really excited to see my family again. Ugh, this is embarrassing.
No, you're good. Just and, power through it.
And like, move on with my life. And I don't mean that in like a, oh God, finally I get to be done with this. But like, just like I did the thing. I finished the thing and now I can go do all the other things that I've been like putting on hold or thinking about or planning or just, you know, not having been able to do because I've been apprenticing. It's very bittersweet.
Yeah. And you don't have to dwell on the present too much, but you know where you're at currently. But take us back to the beginning again, because I know there's episodes where we've talked about the beginning of your apprenticeship and how it felt. And want you to kind of jog your memory back through the very beginning, give the listeners a history on it, just a short history, and then kind of lead up to highlights of your apprenticeship and whatnot and where you're at now with it.
Sure. So I started in, when did I start? May of 21. John Eads, who now runs Left Coast Bones, I was still here. And I guess one of the similarities with where I'm at right now is, you know, I came over here on my own and my husband and son joined me 6 weeks later. And similarly, my husband and son moved back to Michigan about 6 weeks before, you know, I'm leaving. So my son could start school. So there's that similarity. And there's been some overlap with the new apprentice, which is again, similar to when I got here and was overlapping with John. You know, it was exciting to get here in the beginning. And I think I thought I knew more than I did. Which I think is probably pretty normal. And I definitely was humbled a few times in the first couple of months with, you know, really struggling through some of the first projects I had to do. But I don't think I was ever like super discouraged or like, oh crap, I did the wrong thing. Or, you know, I was always still excited to keep on going. But now, let's see. Yeah, I'm trying to think what else at the beginning. I don't know that I had super clear goals. I guess we talked about it a little bit, how I had wanted to focus more on women in bonsai and doing some super feminine, elegant styles. And like I said in the goals episode a few times ago, I haven't totally moved away from that, but I think I've just found other things I want to focus on right now. So, I feel more, what's the word? I don't know. I definitely learned a lot. I'm smarter. Yay.
I mean,
you have to be.
The way you look at bonsai now is is smarter and more, I mean, whatever word. And I don't want to say anything for you because will be all for you. Yeah.
It's interesting to hear from other people too, like what they have seen change, because I'm sure there's things that I haven't noticed, but that I have changed. I think my whole perception of how I look at trees is different. And it's just one of those things you get with time and experience, and anybody can get there. It's just, you just have to do it. But there's, you know, a deeper understanding for refinement and a bigger appreciation for trees that have, you know, weird things about them that some people would cut off or change. Now those are the things that are like, oh, well, maybe highlight it instead. And it's just a different outlook. And a way better understanding of, I think, a lot of the subtleties that I think took for granted before. I always have liked the idea of doing something different and pushing the art and all of this stuff, being kind of a little bit rebellious, but I have a much greater appreciation, I think, now for the subtlety and the tradition of it. And I still want to do some of those funny things or bold things, but it's not as important to me, I think, as it once was. I think what's more important is understanding just how to make each tree the best it can be, more so than trying to make an expression of myself, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So would it be more in working with a tree and honoring its story? Like we talked, like with Jonas, just the episode before, we're talking about maintaining trees and being part of their story. And then, like I said, make it the best it could be of its given variety, style, or whatnot is what I'm kind of gathering there.
Mm-hmm.
But then the room to express the area to express yourself in, how do you feel like you can do that now?
I think I can choose trees that kind of speak to the things I want to say through creating them, you know? So instead of making a tree into what I want, showing it a certain way, I can, like, I'm not forcing a tree that wasn't necessarily going that direction into that direction. I can just appreciate, like, it's not about me as much anymore. It's more about finding the most interesting tree or the tree that speaks to me the most. And I feel like there's an expression of myself through that, even though it's still tree focused. But I still have some fun ideas. I think my personality will shine through more in how it is displayed, because I like to use some non-traditional objects or just maybe do something a little different in that aspect. So I think there'll be a little bit more flavor there in how I express myself, as opposed to how the tree is styled, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's more tree-centric than me-centric, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's close. That's close to a punny joke there, but
yeah, it's pretty close. It rhymes at least.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of.
So, yeah, I think there is an opportunity, though, to also, like, through expression, like, because I'm over here doing the growing aspect, and I can build trees for people who potentially want them to be certain things as well, or I don't know what people want. So,
yeah.
Whereas being the curator and doing, you know, what you're furthering the process of refinement on trees, I can see that being a little bit of a challenge to find expression through that. But yeah, like you are right with the display pieces or our composition arrangements can definitely show your flair and what you want. But that's a really challenging question, honestly, if that, you know.
It really is, yeah. And I think, too, I'm in kind of a lucky position where I get to maintain a collection that's always on display that, you know, is there for education. And, you know, we tend to keep it pretty traditional. So in my own work, I can do whatever I want outside of that collection. You know, I can just spend my time on projects at home instead of, you know, it's not, I don't need to build my full own collection of super traditional trees and then fun trees, like kind of wacky trees or whatever. 'Cause I have that collection where I will actually, you know, work every day, and those will be the traditional refined specimen trees. And then I can go home and my own personal stuff can just be whatever I feel like. Yeah. So yeah. I think I'm in a position there that's pretty lucky for how I like to work. I can do both things, but I don't have to really make a decision, you know, where to put more time.
Yeah. And we had talked about your move back to Ann Arbor and figuring out a situation where you guys will have the yard space that you're looking for those types of projects and stuff. So what's the ideal setup right now in your mind?
I mean, right now we're just renting a place and we don't really have yard space. So that's a little bit annoying on one hand. And on the other hand, it's nice because I don't feel like I have to rush into anything and like get set up right away and get going. I can just like move and then deal with it later. But I think what I've always wanted to live in the woods, and I think we'll move out into some country space further out of the city when my son's out of school. But for now, we want to stick around so he can, you know, stay stable in whatever school he's at least through middle school, then probably into high school too. But so I think we'll probably stick around, you know, the area. If I could find a little bit of land, half an acre, a whole acre, more than that, that'd be amazing. But I think at the moment, anything that's just like a big sized lot would be great, you know, just enough to have a little flower garden, a vegetable garden, some bonsai in the backyard, and room for all of my various animals I want to acquire.
Yeah.
So I don't know. We'll probably be, you know, there's a couple little neighborhoods we like, but, you know, the bigger the yard, the better. So we'll see how the housing market is in a year or so. But yeah. I mean, ideally, if we could find something within the school district that was acreage, that'd be amazing. But housing prices right now, I'm sure as everyone knows, are just a little bit silly.
At the time of this recording, I think interest rates are like astronomical. So, and I mean, just a little while ago, maybe like 2 years ago, it wasn't all that bad and it spiked. So, yeah.
But, yeah, it was a great time to sell when we sold our house. So, you know, that was good. But now buying a house, it's a different story when you're on the other side of it.
Yeah.
And the prices are so high. So,
yeah, it's yeah. But,
we have time to figure it out. And yeah, if we have to, you know, I've got my parents have some land. They're a ways away, but I've got some friends with some space and my parents have space. So I can always stash things there or, you know, if I need to temporarily hold stuff.
So let's we talked about the beginning and stuff a little bit. Let's kind of move through like year one, I guess. So do you have a good enough memory to kind of jog yourself year by year?
Yeah, I'm gonna I'll pull my pictures up so I remember.
Bring back
it's
some
amazing
memories.
It's amazing how helpful photos are. So that was the dumbest thing to say. It was amazing how helpful photos are. Of course it is.
Some people will look at a photo and be like, I don't even know what this was or why I took this photo.
Always those.
Yeah. There's some photos you look at and you're like, oh, that actually, this was around this time. And now I can kind of line this up in my head. So in your first year, were there any projects or any moments that you, any little stories that you have that you can remember? Anything that stands out to you?
Yeah. I mean, that first project that I had to do really humbled me, I guess is a nice way to say it. I was supposed to wire a client tree and, it took me four times longer than it should have. And I was working outside late one of those nights. Actually, John had come back from like a weekend away and was like, oh God, you're not done. Which was very kind of him to stay up late and help me. It was dark. We were working out in the studio and we heard this noise outside. And, you know, we looked, we're like, is that Vivian? This is Michael's cat who lives out in the garden, for those who don't know. And we look around and she's sitting in the studio with us in a chair. So John peeks out over the ledge of a window and he goes, there's a skunk down there. And I was like, oh! And it ran away because he like made a noise and it hurt him. Then he went inside. He's like, I'm done. Good luck. And I was like, oh, thanks. So I stayed out a little bit longer and I look over because I hear something and the skunk has started to walk right into the studio. It's like, oh, hey, what are you doing? And I was like, oh, my God. And I decided to finish the tree the next day. It did get finished eventually, but there was a skunk that decided to come in the studio.
So did you skirt your way around the skunk or are you just like?
It got startled because I yelled. It ran, and they don't see very well, but they don't like noise. If you make noise, they know you're there. And luckily it didn't spray. It turns out it was a mama because she would bring her babies by, even in the daytime afterwards. We had like three baby skunks in the yard that summer, which was adorable. You know, and she didn't really spray that much. Every now and then you'd smell her, but, yeah, we've had a skunk in the yard since then too. I don't know if it's the same one, but there haven't been any more babies. So,
yeah,
every now and then.
We rarely see them here. It's interesting that you would see them in such a busy area. Mm-hmm.
I think it's we've got, you know, with Vivian living outside, there's cat food around, and so they come and lick the bowl, see if there's anything left. Actually, once sprayed in the garage last week. That was real gross. So I think it probably went into the garage and then saw Vivian and went, and then sprayed and then left.
The place where Michael's garden is, it's not in the city proper. It's just kind of...
No, it's like in the suburbs, you know.
There's a lot of suburb. Woodland areas out there, so I can imagine.
Yeah.
I remember when we saw that freaky raccoon that one time. And
raccoon. Yeah, he's still around.
And it just like walked up like it was a cat, like it wanted us to touch it. I was like, no.
He still does. He comes right up to the door and puts his little paw on the glass and says, can I have a graham cracker? And so I go, yes, you can have a graham cracker. And then he takes it. He was actually showed up the other night. I was going to feed Vivian. I turn on the light and the raccoon's sitting there. I'm like, okay, you need to go away so I can feed the cat. And so I turn off the light and I leave for 10 minutes and I come back and turn the light back on. And he's sleeping right next to the food, just waiting. He's just fell asleep on the porch, just waiting for me to come back. I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah.
He's very cute, but a little too friendly.
Yeah. I remember there was some concerns with the raccoon being like that. That could mean
they
were sick or there was something going on, but it's just.
Yeah. He just used to people, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He seems very healthy.
Yeah, he looked like a fat raccoon last week. Last time I saw it. So
he's real chunky. Yeah, so I've domesticated all of the wildlife around. That's probably one of the best things about the apprenticeship and maybe one of Michael's least favorite things, that I have all the wildlife as my friends.
Yeah, I remember.
They don't bother the trees, though. So
I remember being up there and you have crows that follow you.
Maybe.
you have like a duck that like hangs out in y'all's yard.
Yeah.
Was there any other animal run-ins? Raccoon, skunk, crows, duck?
Occasionally, a neighbor's cat will come into the yard.
That's pretty much it.
I mean, the squirrels move through, but they don't really do anything. No, that's pretty much it. The crows are great. Yeah, they still come when I call them, and they'll still follow me around. So I've passed them on to the new apprentice. Luckily, they're into it. So
good. Yeah. Because
the crows will be taken care of.
If you leave and then they're just like, they won't find any interest and they'll just go away.
They'll probably stick around because I think this is just their territory anyway. But
okay.
They'll probably be extra annoying for a while, being like, hey, where's the lady with the peanuts?
Yeah. So in that first year, was there anything that happened, any like shows or anything that you remember, or anything that you did with Michael that would make it like a, I don't know, like the first year to remember. Was there anything? Remember y'all did
Yeah.
some Japanese garden stuff. I don't remember what year that was though.
Oh, I mean, Michael's in charge of setting up that display every year. So, you know, there was transport of trees there in the spring and then back in the fall.
So you were part of that each year, basically. Yeah.
So there was a lot of that. And then I think the first winter was really when I started to get into styling trees for, you know, seriously. You know, everything else was pretty calm and the yard was kind of, you know, put away for winter. And that's really when I was start when I started doing a lot of wiring and styling. And I won't say that I'm like super fast at wiring or styling now. I will say I am significantly faster than I was.
Damn.
And I mean, I don't think I got through very many trees that first winter. And now I can crank out a number of trees every week if I really focus on it. Yeah, the first year there wasn't, you know, too much outside of just kind of the usual seasonal bonsai stuff and kind of getting settled in. Things kind of picked up year two a little bit more once I had, you know, been here for a year and was getting into it. That's when you came out for the first time and we potted
Man.
up that big vine maple and went out to John's and potted up that giant hemlock. And yeah, things started to get more exciting the second year with
The
I think just
second
in
year,
every respect.
would that be, did I come in like the March time?
Yeah, you came
Okay.
for repotting.
Yep. And that was the first time. And yeah, I remember going to John's, doing that big hemlock with him. It was like three people lifting up on this giant tree and just like shoveling the soil in there the best we could
It was so big.
get the potting angle right. Yeah.
Yeah, that was it's still in that box. It's huge freaking tree.
Yeah. Anything with John that you can remember from that year? I know you guys, y'all became relatively close. Y'all are good friends now. And he would go help him at his grow stock field and stuff. And
Yeah, as you know, as much as I could. I never got out there quite as much as I wanted to. But yeah, I would go out there and volunteer when I could. That's when he got all the stock from Anton up in BC, all the mountain hemlocks and shore pines and all of that. So that was a really fun experience seeing John get that first like buy out that first collection and sell it off and get to choose a few trees for myself. He still has some, and I have my eye on a few of them, and I have to tell myself I just want to style them. I don't really need them for myself. So at some point, I kind of want to get back out there and maybe help do some more styling of those so they can sell for him. But to see that amount of raw stock and to be able to walk through it with John and Michael and others and kind of evaluate what trees are the best and what you'd sell them for and all that was a really good experience. And also just one of those things where you're like, oh my God, the trees here are just like, it's just the Yamadori is just out west is crazy. And up north, you know, all these shore trees and mountain trees, there's just so much time and there's just so much time in each one of them. That, you know, you want to be real careful when you're working with them and you hope that the people who get them understand just how special this stuff is. Like,
Yeah.
you cut off a branch, that's 200 years. Like, hope it doesn't die. You know, it's like, it's really, there's a lot of pressure there, with some of these really old, beautiful trees. So that was, I mean, that's really a moment to remember with just kind of seeing that first big collection of Yamadori.
And Are you going to be able to take back some of those pieces with you that you're talking
yeah,
about?
Yeah, I'm taking a couple of the smaller things. I think I'm going to have, I have a big, 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 big hemlock clump that I think I'm going to have to leave here for the time being. It's not going to fit in my vehicle. Yeah. And I didn't want to get, I didn't want to spend more on a bigger truck because I've already, you know, I already am traveling with three cats and bikes and a full vehicle. It's like, I don't really have the stamina to deal with like a U-Haul or a trailer or anything. So it'll have to get transported out, or I'll have to come back and drive it out at some point. But I mean, it'll be in good hands while it's here. And I don't really have, you know, we're moving into a condo. I don't really have a lot of space for it. And it'll give me an opportunity to take my smaller hemlocks and make sure that it's, you know, I have the right setup for them to survive. So I'm not bringing this old raft or this old clump of trees from BC over to Michigan and then just letting it die because I don't have the right setup. So, you know, normally if I have stock that I haven't styled yet, it's, I'm a lot less concerned about overwintering it, but this one is real special. It's one you don't want to screw up. So I want to be sure I'm like, really, really well set up.
I remember looking at that clump, and it's similar to something that Michael would actually put together.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons I got it was kind of as like an homage to Michael. You know, like his hemlock forests have really always been some of my favorite pieces of his work. So I was excited to see that there were more of them and that I could do something similar. As kind of a like a yeah, you know, just like as an appreciation piece for my teacher to carry that style on into something else. So,
yeah.
And then, I, of course, I got a smaller one that he was like, why the heck did you get that? So that's my fun one where like, that's my I'll show you tree versus the classic hemlock clump.
Yeah.
A la Hagedorn.
I remember, did we work on that? That big clump piece the first time I was there or the second time? I think it was the second time.
I think it was the second time.
Yeah. That one where we took off some of the bark and it actually had a dead section. And he had told us, how will you take off chunks of these branches to illustrate a older composition?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, yeah. That was your second time out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I felt that working on that particular clump was one of the most exciting bonsai-like experiences because of, I mean, all of it was there. It was refined. Mm-hmm. Everything was, I mean, it was like, it was much more obvious what work had been done and what needed to be done. Mm-hmm. And that was very enjoyable, you know, working on something like that. So, but you've worked those trees, you know, how many times now? How many times over do you feel like you've done some of the collection now that you've been there for the 3 years?
You know, I should really go through, because I'm sure that there's a few trees that I never really did much on because they just didn't need very much. And so, like, you know, they're one or two times a year they're pruned or whatever. You know, maybe somebody else got their hands on it and I didn't. But I feel like probably what I've worked on the most are the black pines, just because you have to, and the azaleas, just because you have to revisit them multiple times a year. And then actually like the stock maples, like the maples in development in the Anderson Flats, just because, again, that's one that you have to hit at least twice a year with your cutbacks and your pruning. And I spent a lot of time with both the black pine and the maples studying like how do you, you know, so it's a piece of material that's 5 or 10 years away from being a tree in a pot. So it's more than just like pre-bonsai. It's like unrefined bonsai, essentially. So how do you take this level of tree up to the next step of refinement? So where's the best front? How do you make the cuts and plan ahead for the next 2 years, 3 years as you're working this year? How do you identify what has been done? How do you identify what you're going to do and where you want to be? Like, how do you set yourself up for success over the next 2 or 3, it's like chess, essentially. I say that like I know how to play chess, but I'm not very good. I can I can beat a kid. I can't beat somebody who actually plays. So I think I've touched those trees probably the most. Just, you know, both out of their needs and just, I think, kind of my own learning goals. Figuring out how to get to refinement over time is, I feel like that's a stage we don't cover a whole lot in workshops and teaching bonsai in general, unless you're kind of working one-on-one with a teacher over a long period of time. You don't always see that. You know, you get your workshop material, you style something, or you do a single bring your own tree workshop, but you don't ever revisit it again and again and again with a professional to get yourself up to that level of refinement that you see in a professional garden. So
it's the grind of going in and looking at every single root, looking at every single branch, looking at every single cut and wire and that you don't get, like you said.
And identifying the branches that, okay, I'm leaving this for this year, or I'll cut that in the fall. And then the next year, like, I'll mark this branch, like, don't cut it for 2 years. Like, you know, I have to remember these things and mark them and find ways to really think it through. That's where it's fun to have multiple trees. And not just one.
You don't want to pick apart.
So you can work on
one.
Yeah,
tree.
You can work on lots of things while you're waiting for the other things.
Yeah. So it sounds like a lot of the conifers, like the probably like the pine trees, if I had to guess, like the single flush pines.
Yeah,
the
lot
least
of pine,
works.
A lot of juniper. But it's been interesting. It's like less on the refined trees and more on the stuff that's getting to that point. Pine, juniper, and a lot of maple.
Hey guys, it's Evan with Underhill Bonsai and, of course, The Little Things. And we want to just let you know that we have a scholarship fund for bonsai education that's going to be supplied by The Little Things ourselves, as well as Joshua Rath Tools. John said he is excited about the scholarship and that he wanted to do his own contribution as well. John will be contributing $200 worth of Joshua Rath tools to the scholarship fund as well. So in addition to being able to go to a local bonsai establishment, either it be a bonsai nursery or a bonsai professional, and seek training or classes through them, Joshua Rath will also send you a nice beginner set of $200 worth of tools to fit your needs for your bonsai goals and dreams.
This podcast is supported by Bonsai Bar, the beginner bonsai workshop popping up in breweries all across the Northeast. Bonsai Bar is 2 hours of tiny tree goodness disguised as a night out with friends. Come grab drinks, create a new tree, and watch as your friends and family get the bug for bonsai. Bonsai Bar is always looking for teachers and assistants, and you listen to this podcast, so you're probably already qualified. Bring your knowledge out to the bar. Apply today. Find event tickets, contact info, and more at bonsaibar.com.
Hey guys, it's Evan with Underhill Bonsai, and I just wanted to tell you guys about Say Bonsai. It's going to be happening from March 28th to the 30th, 2025. We're going to be everything Louisiana for a full weekend, so we're going to include a crawfish boil, homemade gumbo, and other food trucks and vendors that are very special, I guess you can say, the southern culture of Louisiana. And also the show will include a bonsai show with its own special awards, including Best in Show, Best Shohin, Best Traditional Design, People's Choice Award, and also a tongue-in-cheek Best Bald Cypress Bonsai Award. Guest artists and visiting artists will include Julian Tsai, Sylvia Smith, Mike Lane, Carmen Lesko-Bianski, Dawn Ketting, Randy Bennett, and Guy Guidry. Each artist will be presenting demonstrations and giving workshops throughout the weekend. You can go over to underhillbonsaistore.com and go under our Say Bonsai Workshops tab, and you can sign up for
just regular attendance. It's going to be $25 just to get into the exhibit tent. And then all the workshops will be spaced out and they will all have individual pricing. We hope to see you guys there.
How many trees do you feel like you've repotted with Michael or alongside Michael with the, or by yourself repotted so far? What do you feel like your count is?
Oh, I have no idea. But I will say not as many as I thought I would have by now. Yeah, I think part of it is because, well, are we counting the ones that have gotten repotted, even if they weren't, like, if I witnessed it, even though I didn't do it? did I supervise students doing it?
There was a lot of supervising students because the repotting season, very clever of Michael, do repotting classes and have students do it. Yeah. Uh-huh. So, but there was other ones that you were responsible for because they were specialized.
Yeah. And then like all the summer repotting, that's just me and Michael occasionally volunteer. So I don't know, probably. I have no idea. I would have to actually think about it. I think I thought I would have done more, but I mean, there's a lot of conifers in the yard and, you know, they're kind of those trees where unless you really have to repot them, you know, we don't. There's no just arbitrary repotting. It's all necessary repotting. So it's like there's some conifers here that, you know, haven't been repotted in like 10 years or longer. And then there's maples that I have repotted 2 of the 3 years I've been here. So it's so crazy just based on root growth and what needs it. I don't know if 100, that's probably too many. Maybe 50?
50 that you can say confidently, maybe. They were more like repots and less like root adjustments or maintenance prunes, because now you know there's so many different ways to go about it too.
Well, I mean, anything we took out of a pot, I count as a repot, regardless of how much we've taken off. Like half bare roots, probably 10. Full bare roots, 1 or 2.
Yeah, which doesn't happen all that often in refinement.
No, not in refinement. Those are all younger stuff. But you helped half bare root something when you were here, that spruce. It's doing very well, by the way.
Yeah.
Ready for another repot.
That was one of the scariest repots I've done because I don't know that species, never touched it in my life. And then I'm asked to take one of Michael's well-known pieces.
Half bare root it.
Yeah.
It's not a big deal. Just take all the soil out.
Yeah. But it taught me that whole like pie slice method kind of thing that is proper for Yamadori. But what blows my mind is that Michael initially collected that piece and basically just wrote it out with mostly field soil styled and put on that slab.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a hemlock we repotted this year since it's going into the expo. And we found, I don't know when the last time it was repotted. Actually, I repotted it a couple of years ago, I think. But we wanted to change the repotting angle, so we did it again this year. And we actually found a giant pocket right underneath the trunk of field soil. And so we took it all out, and the tree looks great, and it's very happy. It's grown so many roots, it's like pushed itself up out of the pot on one side. Which has changed the planting angle that we had adjusted it for just a little bit, but
that happens.
in the right direction, I guess. I don't know how long that tree has been a bonsai. Like, it's been a bonsai for a long time. It's a refined tree. I just don't know if it ever had that full, you know, treatment of totally changing it over to bonsai soil. And then you helped with one of the other hemlocks where we did another partial bare root, right? You were that clump.
I did that giant clump, and we took out and we basically ored out all the way to the center almost.
Yeah. And it's like that thing's been, that's totally refined. It's been a bonsai for 10 years or, you know, like a long time. It's well known, and we're still pulling field soil out of it. So like, some of this stuff, like we repot so infrequently because the tree doesn't necessarily need it, that, you know, it's just, we're still finding original soil and yeah, it's always kind of a fun endeavor to go into those clumps and those really old yamadori.
Yeah. Hats off to Michael for remembering where things have been repotted. He'll go in and be like, right here and right here. And it's like one of like how many trees in the garden?
Yeah, I don't know. I've never counted.
Which is kind of crazy because you're there all the time. So, you know, I mean, do you feel like after working with a collection like that, like exclusively, like, because you're there every day, mm-hmm. 7 days a week, you mm-hmm. go put your eyes on them. Do you feel that just connection with them? I mean, I don't know. Yeah. I know how I feel with my own trees, but with that many trees, yeah. You know.
Yeah, I feel like I know most of them. I recognize most of them. I remember most of the stuff we've done on, like, if you go out into the, like, the maples and the Anderson flats, I don't always remember exactly what we did to each one, but I at least recognize the tree and can kind of figure out from context clues where we're at and where we're going. So that's good. But yeah, I feel like mostly I know all the trees. There's probably, you know, if I was going to estimate, probably about 100 like show trees in, you know, in pots on benches. And then another 100 or 150 in development. Mm-hmm. So, and there's a lot of trees, probably 300 trees.
Yeah. And it's not even that big of a yard space, honestly. It's
mm-mm.
it's just the way it's laid out. It feels big, but at the same time, mm-hmm. you really put it in perspective. It's not.
Yeah.
It's just the way the lot's cut really long. So, which, I mean, I think we had like a thing a while back. We were talking about favorite trees and stuff. And mm-hmm. I remember Eric came by and did a Bonsai-Fi interview with you.
And yeah, you were there when that happened. That was fun.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So if you guys go over to YouTube, you look up Bonsai-Fi, you look up Carmen's interview, you can actually see me walking around awkwardly, like carrying things and watering things in the background. But I remember one of the things that you said in that video, because I was there in real time, and he was like, which of the trees are your favorite? And you had pointed out the vine maple that has the very dramatic cantilever look to it. Like, it's just up on this formed mound, and it drapes over really beautifully and naturally, and it's only pruned for naturalness. It's not pruned for anything else, really. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Does that still stand true? Is that still your favorite tree?
Still my favorite.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So what, like, I guess this is a good retrospective on it, is what drew you to it initially the first time, and now when you look at it now with a mature eye for it after completing your apprenticeship, what now do you notice?
Mm-hmm. I think it's always been that it feels like you're walking through a magical forest. Like, it's just something you would see way out in the woods when you're having a hike. And like, it's just really, it's just one of those trees that like you're hiking and you stop and you look at it and you're like, wow, that's just really beautiful. And you like take a picture of it and you're like, if I was a photographer, I'd blow this up and put it on my wall. Like, it's just like, you know, the prettiest thing you see in nature. And that's always kind of been the draw of it for me, I think, is just how it makes me feel, like how I want to feel when I'm in the woods. And that rings true to today. So like we were talking with Jonas about like in our last episode about, you know, judging trees and what makes a good tree versus, you know, how do you suspend your own opinion of what you like and don't like to judge a tree, essentially. And like, you know, looking at it, it's probably, you know, it's a good tree. It's a yamadori. It's not the best tree in the yard by any means, but
go pull up a picture of it real quick while you're talking about it.
Mm-hmm. But it's still my favorite. Like, even though I know what, you know, the best trees are and why they're that way, and you know, it's still the one that just makes me feel the best, so it's the one I really like.
So if you guys go over to Michael's website, you go over to the portfolio in the top right, you see like the little, we call it a hamburger, go to also the drop menu, and portfolio, you go to the deciduous. It's the very first tree. And this thing, like Carmen said, it feels like a walk in the woods. Like you have this tree that's reaching out towards you with the ferns and the moss is growing all the way up the pillar that it's growing on. And, you know, in the picture, it doesn't look like anything out of the ordinary until you start exploring the details of it. About you get this, like, take a step back and go, how in the hell did this happen? You know, Michael did a whole blog post about how he did this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've ever seen that post.
Mm-hmm.
Where he built the foundation of the, I guess, container/stand/
mm-hmm.
environment. It's a really intuitive piece of, you know, bonsai into it, like, I'm looking for the words just to describe how clever this whole thing was put together. But yeah, if you look at it, there's nothing really about it that says first branch, second branch, classical or traditional styles or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But when you see this thing in person, which that changes everything, and you've had the pleasure of, you know, being around it for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is really something, you know, and I could see it as your favorite, you know, because mm-hmm. you said you like more playful things. And it mm-hmm. is, I mean, this doesn't fall in line with, like, you see the image right below. It's a gorgeous chochibai right below the image on his website that mm-hmm. more illustrates a traditional design. And so it, in sharp contrast to everything you see in his garden, this, I think the vine maples have always kind of been that way, though, because of the mm-hmm. way they are, you know.
Yeah, so. They're just such a kind of, I guess, playful tree, you know. They're twisty and they're really vigorous. You can get away with a lot. And it's just a good species to get creative with because they don't follow normal bonsai form.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they just don't want to. If you see a single trunk vine maple, you're like, wait, what? I've seen a few, but none of them read quite right. So,
yeah. So let's track. Denver and Nationals happened last year as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
So end of year two.
It was like beginning of year three. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because we have to kind of look at it too. Something I failed to mention to the listeners here about the way your apprenticeship worked. You started mid-year, basically. So
I started in May and I'm ending, now at the end of September. I did a couple extra months because I kept a small appointment with the University of Michigan throughout this whole thing. And so added a couple extra months on to essentially make up for the time I spent doing my other job while I was here. So it's kind of like a 3.5 year gig.
Yeah. And so your year,
mm-hmm.
the greater scheme of like the way this is laid out, it's kind of a weird skew mm-hmm. because your middle of your year would have been winter, but that's kind of mm-hmm. how it feels. It kind of feels like summer
mm-hmm.
is where it really is. You know, that's where it begins, and then the fall, and then the cycle of back into summer. That's kind of how I feel bonsai really should be looked mm-hmm. at too.
You know, it was a good place to start. I think because coming in the winter would have been tricky, just kind of jumping into repotting. I think it was good to start, you know, during a growing season before it was too hot that I had to be completely responsible for watering, you know, and then there's a lot of work to do in the spring, but it's not quite as intense as in the fall. So I think it was a good time to start.
Mm-hmm. So going into Denver, I remember, mm-hmm. We met up at the ABS show in Denver. And then you got to do your Women in Bonsai.
Yeah.
So that was a panel that you did there. And that's not the only one that you've done, right? You've done other ones like that.
Mm-mm.
Or was that the first? That was the first time you and Sam sat down and did it.
Yeah, that was the first time we did like a panel at a big show. I guess that was the first time I was technically a presenter. I don't know. I was part of that panel. Yeah, that was cool. I was glad to be part of that. And I'm glad that they were open to having us talk about that. That was a fun trip. Really lovely gardens in Denver. Good show. yeah, that was a good time.
Yeah. And I remember going through that, through the display and critiquing in real time there and, you know, making judgments or based off of the scale that you've learned from Michael now. And, and so that would have been like the first show besides Nationals that would have been later that year that we would have gone through and looked at trees and how does it feel going from apprenticeship to a show like that? And then seeing trees on display, because you're also, did you do PPE when it happened the first time?
I did not. No, I stayed back to cover watering and heating. It was cold.
Yeah. So how did Denver and Nationals feel from coming from an apprenticeship standpoint, like while that was happening?
It was a different experience than before the apprenticeship, because I had started looking at trees differently and judging them more, I don't want to say harshly, but being more critical about what makes a good tree versus not a good tree. And then how, you know, displays work and what's a good display versus not a good display. And none of that is to fault anybody who is showing a tree. You know, so a lot of, if a tree is quality or not quality is up to the tree, and regardless of what you do to it, it's going to just be what it is. That makes it sound a lot worse than what I mean it to
be.
It's a different lens to look at trees through now, with a more critical eye, but also being able to see where it is people need the help learning how to move forward. And so I think that's probably what was most helpful about going to those shows through the apprenticeship, was kind of identifying, okay, well, here's this problem I'm seeing a lot. So when I hit the road or present or talk to people or teach or whatever, these are some of the things I can focus on to really help people get to that next level. It's like, okay, they've gotten this far, but they just need to go a little bit further with this skill or something like that, you know? So, definitely I judge the trees and the displays more harshly, but in the sense of, okay, how do we make it better and how can I help people make it more than what it is now? It's a lot less like, oh, wow, yeah, bonsai, trees everywhere, this is amazing, and more like, aha, interesting, let's see. Like, I like playing the game of judging trees. I like having opinions. I don't know if you noticed, I like having opinions.
Oh, yeah. That's been a cornerstone of our show for a little while. And I think it's done positive for listening. So I think our listeners appreciate it. So do you feel like you could judge a show now? How do you feel on that? Like if someone were to say, here, show's coming up, such as say Bonsai, how do you feel going into that?
I feel confident. I feel like I probably could do, I don't think I could do the best job of any of the professionals, but I feel like I could do a pretty decent job.
So
I feel like I've had a lot of practice separating myself from what I like from being subjective versus objective. And I'm very proud of that of myself, because I'm a very subjective person. So like, I feel in that sense, I would be good at it, being able to be like, okay, objectively, here's what's good and what's not. Great.
So is there anything else from the past 3 years, any kind of other little, you know, maybe little stories that you remember or anything that was a highlight? Was there like a particular tree that you might have worked on with Michael that brought up something that was an aha moment before we move to the future?
I mean, I feel like there have been very obvious times in the apprenticeship where I feel like I have leveled up. Like suddenly one day you wake up and everything, like that skill that you were practicing is just suddenly easier and makes sense. And like, those are really fun days, because you're like, haha, I finally, like wiring, like the day you don't have to think as hard about your wiring plan or how to hold your hands or like how to keep gaps out of your wire or whatever, you know, like the day that you get it, you're like, oh, it's not going to take me 100 hours anymore. It's only going to take me 50 or whatever. So that's been really fun. And I think probably the thing I didn't expect was the personal baggage I had to kind of wade through of like dealing with. And, you know, I talked to you about this recently about like the perfectionism and the almost imposter syndrome of like, okay, well, I've been doing this for so long and I'm actually just terrible at it and I'm no good and I don't know what I'm doing and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Like having to kind of get over myself or push through things that are uncomfortable or admit that like, okay, I'm really not that great at this and I need more practice or, you know, stuff that just like nobody really wants to have to deal with themselves in that way. I think I expected more of the challenges to be the trees than my own brain, but I think my brain was the harder thing to get over in all of this. But it's a good experience to have to get through that, even though it's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
To put it nicely.
No, I mean, I think you hit it pretty solid there. Like you hit the nail on the head with the whole imposter syndrome thing. I've had conversations with other friends of mine about this type of thing in the past, and that's why I picked up on it. We were having that conversation too. It's just like I said, you can give yourself a hard time, but like sometimes you have to give yourself a break as well, you know, because like you said, you've done it. Like you mentioned with the wiring thing, it's like, you know, years, yeah, you know, back 3 years ago before you started this wiring, I mean, that's for those who have wired bonsai, especially trees on a higher level,
you look sucks. At this. It's hard.
Yeah, it's not just something you sit down and you're like, I'm going to just mechanically do this. Like it requires your entire attention and planning out. Like you said, wire planning is something I found valuable from Michael and have putting into practice. But even you have gotten more time in that, so.
Mm-hmm. And I, you know what? And honestly, 3 years in, I still mess up a lot. And well, just so people don't think that like suddenly, like
you're not a magician at this point.
But. No, not yet. But like, and I don't know, maybe other people have gotten it faster, but like, it's still complicated. It's still really hard. You still run into these things where you're like, what side of the branch do I put the wire on? Like, how long have I been doing? Like, I know what I'm doing. I just, sometimes your brain just forgets, you know, like, I don't know. So, but yeah, it's really complicated. The first few months, I was like power napping at lunch and then napping after the like at the end of the day. When you were here, I think I took a nap a couple times too. Like it can just be physically.
You took a nap each day.
I did not. Maybe I did. It's exhausting. It's really hard, like to think and to do it mentally and physically and. And on teaching days, it's hard too, because then you have the social aspect. So it can just be a lot. I was real tired. Honestly, sometimes I still take naps. Also, naps are great. So if you can squeeze one in, would recommend, regardless of how much you're wiring.
And I was just giving you a hard time about the nap thing. But
I probably did take a nap, though. Like,
I mean,
it's fine.
It's the.
I'll admit it. I like sleeping.
It's the burnout. It's the headaches of staring at things for a long time, and it can get to you. And and since this is what you're doing, because it's so interesting to me to put that into perspective. Because at the times I was there, I was just a visitor, experiencing. Mm-hmm. I was secondhand experiencing what you were doing 7 days a week, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Well, five days, but 7 days. Those days were easier.
Yeah.
Unless you wanted to work.
Right.
But I mean.
But yeah, it's still on site, still with the trees, still responsible for them if something were to go wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot. Plus, you know, parenting and trying to also have a life of some kind is just, it's a lot.
And I wasn't going to bring up the personal side of that too much on your families, but I know that, you know, even with just having Rory in my life now and witnessing some of the stuff that, you know, when I was there with you guys, I could not imagine. I mean,
I know I felt kind of bad as there were a couple of times, you know, Gus had little meltdowns and I was like, oh no, it's embarrassing. Or like, oh, I hope Evan's not like annoyed.
No, but seeing it from your perspective, And then also knowing that, yeah, like you have a life and then bonsai apprenticeship, like Michael lets you do something unheard of in bonsai apprenticeship, which try to maintain your family close to you, you know?
Right. That's crazy.
Yeah. I don't know if that's more common now, or how many other people have that opportunity to bring their family to such a thing.
Yeah, I don't know. I think in Japan, I think you probably could have them there, but I don't think your workload would change. And here, you know, I was able to have some, you know, limits to how much I was working so that I could, you know, be with my family. Like that was an
understood between
there
you and
go
Michael.
Understood yeah.
Yeah, the other
it was understood yeah. It was understood. I haven't had a nap today. It was understood that, like, oh, there's, I have family and, you know, I want to spend time with them and raise my kid. So there was that was helpful for sure. I couldn't have done it otherwise. So
let me know if this gets a little shaky for you and answer best you can, but going in to this apprenticeship, how is it looking at Michael now as your teacher versus on the other side?
He's more human now. And, you know, like you always kind of idolize your teacher, but after spending, you know, so much time with a person, they just become more human as you get to know them. And so, you know, still idolized, of course, and up there as someone to aspire to be. But I guess, yeah, just I think more relatable, and it's fun to see how the process works and how his brain works. And I don't know, not too much has changed. I think more just the humanness behind it all.
And so you feel like, I don't know, it might be a silly question to ask, but like, do you feel like you and Michael will continue to be connected, where you'd be able to reach out to him and and stuff like that? So they're, you know, because it's weird, because like maybe you went into it and now you're leaving, you're like, man, I don't know how many times I'll be able to talk with Michael, or maybe you got tired of it. I don't know. There's so many different personal ways you could have dealt with it.
Right.
I
think we'll stay in touch, and, you know, over text and phone and all that stuff. And I hope that I'm allowed to come back out and play in the yard and work on the trees that I've, you know, it's hard to be leaving in that respect, because, you know, all the other apprentices are kind of right around here and can interact with him regularly and do events together and all this other stuff. And so being all the way back in Michigan, it's going to be a different kind of relationship, I think, than he has with his other apprentices. But I am hopeful that, you know, we can keep the teacher apprentice relationship going, as far as coming back out to work on trees, or you know, hopefully we get to do some events together at some point, or you know, whether it's the next expo, or if I come out to Portland to do a weekend with BSOP, or, you know, something. I hope that there's more opportunities like that, but I'll at least be texting him pictures and harassing him for help and, you know, those good things.
I mean, that's a really great person to just kind of have in your pocket, really. Like, if you're ever like, hey, what do you think about this tree? You know?
Yeah. Like, help, what is happening here? Yeah. Where is the front? How do I wire?
Yeah. I think that resource for you will, you know, as long as Michael is here to respond and give you that advice, I mean, that's near infinite amount of information and help from there. That seems, you know, that's a huge benefit. And you've got
it would be hard to just like disappear.
Yeah, that would be weird. In my opinion, it would be weird.
It would be strange. Yeah.
But yeah, like I was saying, you have his trust. You have, you know, part of that, part of your story is now part of his story. And so that's just really, you know, that's really important. You know, that's one of those romanticized thoughts of apprenticeship and then making a mark on, you know, I mean, you're going to be on Michael's website listed on his people that he's associated with and gone through.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. And so when people go back and they look and they're like, oh, this person and this person, you may have met this person. You may know who this professional is. And I think that's, you know, that's huge, you know, to be able to see that. And we had talked in the past, you have even articles that are published that you're included in. So mm-hmm. you're part of that too. So
yeah, it is really fun to be part of Bonsai Story. And, you know, I haven't really spent a lot of time thinking about big picture, but like, I feel like now it's kind of a real pivotal moment in like American bonsai, and to be kind of involved in that and part of it is really exciting. So, mm-hmm. you know, I don't often think about it, but when you step back and really look at it, it's like, it's kind of cool. So
yeah, I have to humble myself and step back and look at like the broader picture all the time and say, where are we at in the world of bonsai, and what's in, you know, who's doing what right now, what's important. And I think this is, I mean, one of the best times. I mean, we could look at this 10 years from now and be like, now this is the best. I mean, but like, this is pretty solid, you know, where everything's
at. Yeah.
So,
yeah. Like bonsai is gaining importance and people are getting more into it, and there's more people coming back from Japan, and there's more awareness and more, like, it's kind of exciting. You know, the shows are getting better.
There's an overwhelming amount of people coming back from Japan, I feel
yeah,
like.
It's like, yeah, it's going to be, I think bonsai is going to get better, and it's fun to be part of that. I hope that, I hope I start a trend with getting into curation, that maybe some other professionals want to, you know, join the ranks and maybe, you know, take a step further into public gardens and such, instead of just doing work privately. So we'll see.
Yeah. There is money in private work, but the curator mm-hmm. experience that you have, yeah.
It's a sweet gig, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. That seems like something more and more people should consider. Like, we've stressed about that in previous episodes, but yeah, mm-hmm. I can see that. So now for a little bit of future talk, I know we talked, mm-hmm. I mean, if people haven't been listening to previous episodes or kind of leading up to what your future plans are, obviously you're going back mm-hmm. to the university, mm-hmm. but what other things are kind of in prospects for you beyond that?
So I'll be managing the collection at University of Michigan, which is exciting, where, you know, we've almost got the full donation of trees from Dr. Goldstein on site. And so I'm kind of excited to, like, once all the trees are there and once our cold storage is finished, which should be really soon, like, there's just all these kind of pieces falling together. And so to really get, you know, the next pieces of, like, what's next? Are we just caring for trees? Like, what programming are we doing? What outreach are we doing? Like, kind of what's next for that collection is really exciting. And then outside of that, I am planning to do some travel. I have a couple things booked for next year, Sable Bonsai being one of them. I'm doing a couple club things. And, you know, next year is kind of a dipping my toe in the water to see how much I can do in addition to having a full-time job, because I want to be able to travel. I really like that part. I do like teaching. I like kind of getting out there, because, you know, collection maintenance can get kind of monotonous over time. So doing something else in addition to that is really fun. Mm-hmm. I'm excited to, you know, get a small collection of my own going and work on some projects that I haven't had time for. So that'll be really cool. And, you know, I'm hoping to actually, you know, have a side business. And I'm not totally sure what that looks like yet, but, you know, it'll probably just mostly be me and, you know, the bit of traveling that I do and teaching that I do, but actually making that and, like, you know, making it an official thing will be really neat. So I have a lot of ideas of things to do, and it'll be really fun to, as I said earlier, move on with my life. And, you know, in that way of, you know, all the what's next, there's a lot of what's next, it's gonna be real fun. So
yeah, and just to think of, like, all the things that you can just make the executive decision on now versus mm-hmm. being tied to the apprenticeship more
mm-hmm. yeah.
than you were before.
Yeah, it's, yeah, I had been kind of, you know, my own boss for a long time, and having to go back to the subordinate role was a little bit difficult for me, and like the, you know, like, I just wanted to do this thing instead. But getting to go back to the more of a being in charge role is always fun. So,
yeah, yeah, for sure. Well, I mean, it's kind of weird to say this will be the last episode that you record, and it from the, not for the show, guys, this is not
forever, just yeah. from Portland.
Yeah. So this is her last time reporting in from Portland. Soon we'll see you in Ann Arbor. That'll be interesting.
Yeah, I got to set up a new space for podcasting.
Got to have another spot with your computer and your microphone.
It's, right.
We don't have like big fancy gigs or any, you know, like setups or anything going on here. It's just microphone and some headphones. And
I'm gonna have to get a new microphone. This one's got to stay here. This is the apprentice microphone.
Yeah, but so. I mean, they're affordable. The mics that we use.
I know. We're not gonna get a new mic.
We're not sponsored by Yeti. That would be really cool, though. Yeah.
Hey Yeti.
They're just consumer grade microphones, but they work beautifully. Also, I'll praise Matt, our editor, for making us sound really good no matter how iffy the audio can be, but that's a huge part of it as well. So this would be the last recording from Portland, and I just wanted to kind of get a last bit of insight from you.
Mm-hmm.
Would you recommend apprenticeship to someone who wants to learn?
Absolutely not. No, I'm just kidding.
What's your standpoint on Bonsai Apprenticeship now?
Yeah, I think it's, if you are serious about doing bonsai, I really think the only way that you can get better at bonsai is to do something like apprenticing. I mean, I feel like you have to have a teacher that knows what they're doing and really immerse yourself in it if you're going to hit, you know, the level of quality and refinement that you see in Japan and in the best trees in the US. Like, there's no other substitute for it. Just doing it for a couple hours, you know, every week, or doing a bunch of workshops, you know, you can only get so far. So, I mean, the more time you can spend with a teacher working on quality material, the better. I will say, it's not easy and it's not always enjoyable. You know, there's a romanticized aspect to it, and sometimes it is really like cool and, you know, matches that image you have in your mind of what apprenticeship is. And then other times it just kind of, you know, it's just hard. It's like being in school, like struggling through a, I don't know, higher level degree or something. It's really challenging. But in the end, if you love doing bonsai, I do think it's worth it. So, you know, even if it's not a formal apprenticeship, do you have a local teacher you can work with regularly? You know, just the closer you can get yourself to quality bonsai and quality teachers, the better you're going to be, and the more successful you'll be. So, yeah, I would recommend.
Would recommend. Yeah. And and I mean, we're the same age, aren't we?
I'm a little older.
Oh, okay. Well, that was another thing, was question on age. If someone was going to start a little bit later on life, we're third of the way. Don't want to be dark or anything, but.
Yeah, about a third of the way. You know, it's that whole midlife career change. I mean, for me, it's not really career change, but it's, you know, if you were going to go back to school or change your career, you know, a lot of people do that in their 30s, early to mid 30s. And like, that's what I did. It's a lot harder when you have a family, you know, just because they want your attention for some reason. But if you have a supportive partner or a supportive network, you can do it. It's definitely not easy. You know, there were times where it was extra hard. You know, it's without my family here, I've been able to do a lot more work. But, you know, I miss my family. So it's it's much easier to do if you're single or don't have kids. But, you know, John had has kids. I have a kid. The next apprentice has a kid. Like, you can do it with kids. It's just harder. And you have to have the right kind of support network and really know what you're getting into. But yeah, I think if you're right out of college, go do it right now. And if you're in your, you know, midlife changing careers or getting more into it, then you still can do it. You can do it.
Yeah. Just
prepare yourself.
And be serious and lock down.
Yeah. Basically. You got to get real serious about it.
Yeah. Like, sell your house serious, like you did.
Yeah, sell your house, move across the country. Yeah.
Yeah.
Drive 35 hours with cats there and back again.
Yeah, there and back again. The Hobbit's Tale. So the very last question, and doesn't have to be anything grandiose or giant, but what is the thing that you're going to miss the most about this apprenticeship?
The crows.
The crows. That's it. The duck that you guys defended every day.
My duck. I'll miss being around the trees. After you spend 3 years working on a collection, you get to know the trees. You know, there's some projects I didn't get to do just because, you know, the timing wasn't right, or you know, I didn't get around to it. And so that's kind of a, you know, it's a bummer, but maybe I can come back and work on it another time. But like, there's trees that I've watched being developed from back when I started seasonals in 2018. So like, and I'm still working on them and I see how far they've come. And so missing, it's like, kind of like having a kid, like you're missing some of the big stages of some of the development of these trees. But like, I know I'm not gone forever and I can still come back and see the trees and follow online and all that. But I'm gonna miss like the early mornings in the garden alone with coffee. Like, that's always really, really nice when like you're the first one awake, you're the only person in the garden, when you have a good cup of coffee and you're just like hanging with the trees.
Yeah. I get that sense too. I mean, even as simple and small as my collection is, I have it laid out. It's kind of funny. I laid it out like it's a tiniest slice of the way Michael's garden is set up, where it has the center block tables and the pots underneath, and the trees are all lined up. And even that little tiny slice right there, I'll go out there with it. Like you said, be up in the morning, water trees, coffee in hand, and then you just get lost, and then the day starts.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, there's that real special window of time between sunrise and when your kid wakes up.
Which, yeah, I'm not there
to
yet.
To have that. Well,
yeah. Rory's just awake already.
Nice. Yeah. No, but just before, you know, really before anybody else is up, it's just nice.
Yeah.
It's so nice.
Yeah. And what time do you normally go into the university? Is it early enough to still experience that, or?
Yeah, it probably will be. You know, it's a little bit flexible, but I'm hoping that I'll be, you know, it'll kind of depend on Lou's job, whether like which one of us will be home to get the kid after school. So, but likely I will be going in pretty early, somewhere around 7:30 or 8. So, and you know, the garden doesn't open to the public till 10. So there's still that window of time in the morning where it's just staff. And so there will be those couple hours of quiet.
Yeah,
that's always been my favorite time at work anyway, is before the people get there. You can walk the gardens or play with the trees or whatever. So I am looking forward to still having that.
Yeah, that I feel like that's something. I don't know if you felt that way before, but it feels like that's something that was learned a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I always kind of had that. I've always liked to like go outside in the morning and just have the quiet. But being with the trees here, it's a different kind of quiet.
Like, and just to my last closing kind of thoughts on that too. You talking about quiet times with the trees. I remember being up there, and I like evenings, so I just remember being in the evenings with with just a cold beer and sitting on the back porch, and just looking, and just not even doing anything, just being still, or because stuff like that's very rare in today's world.
It's really easy to get caught up in the work and the things that you have to do and to forget to just look at the trees. Like,
yeah.
So it's good to find that time to just look at them.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. But yeah, this is it. So,
yeah.
For all of our listeners out there, make sure you guys go in and Discord, Carmen's socials, wherever you might go, and tell her congratulations. Personal congratulations from me as well, of course.
Ugh, you're gonna make me cry.
No, but no, I won't.
Again,
I won't bear
down.
Don't
make me feel feelings.
I won't bear down on it. Well, we can talk later, but just as a congratulations from from me, and of course, I'm sure all the other little things are supporting you. But yeah, that was awesome. Thanks for that exit interview. So we'll have this moment, and we can look back on it, and we'll see where you are in maybe a year, 2 years, and by then you've had done things like headline shows and done workshops, and we'll see what the Ann Arbor collection looks like in the future. So, but
a lot of fun stuff coming up.
Yep, but yeah, until then, but anyway, so I had mentioned earlier that we're going to talk about the 100th episode, and this is going to be new to you as well.
Yeah, I'm excited to figure out what the heck it is that we're doing.
Yeah, so, I think what I want to do, what I'm presenting here is, I think we should do a thing where we invite some best buds into the chat with us here to maybe even speak with us on episode 100. And then we can have a little bit of like a live thing, but not really, but kind of. And so we'll invite some best buds of ours, and it could be as many people as that want to participate as possible. So looking at the calendar, because you've got 2 weeks before you're settled back where you're going to be. So from the release of this episode, that would put us towards probably mid-November. That's what we're looking at right now.
You mean October?
Well, I'm giving this, at the time of this recording, this will be 2 weeks from here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. We're working in like the past still with
November.
All these recordings.
All right.
Yep. So sometime in November, if that works for you, we'll make it work for everyone. Mm-hmm. But when me and Carmen and Mike all get a date that we can agree on for 100, we'll make sure 100 is, nailed down, and then we have a date that we want to invite our best buds to come hang out with us. And
so if you're not a best bud yet, you still have time.
Yep. You still have time to jump in, become a $5 member, and have the opportunity to just be part of our 100. So that will be our pizza party. So you don't have to say anything unless you want to. We'll have the chat, so it'll be done through Zoom. So through the chat box, you guys can participate by asking us questions or making interjections or whatever you want to do, or ranting. We'll make sure to make this episode really easy for Matt to edit. So we'll see what we can do, but I think we should plan on at least a 2-hour block, and then for best buds to come in and we can chat and hang out and just celebrate 100 episodes, and then present at the end of that time block the scholarship for
Sweet.
The Little Things Educational Fund.
That sounds super fun. I'm in.
Yeah, definitely. I think I should be in there too.
Yeah, probably
a part of it. But yeah, so in regards to the Little Things Fund, Educational Fund, if you are not a best bud yet, become a best bud, and then submit your story and your plan for your bonsai future, our hopes or dreams, whatever it might be, over to me at evan@underhillbonsai.com. I don't have like a form or anything. John from Joshua Roth Tools suggested that we have like a form to fill out and stuff, but I think I like it a little bit more organic. So we have like at this moment, we have three. I've forwarded the three stories to Carmen for us to review, and we would like to get some more. I mean, we'll take as many as we can get.
Yeah, if the pool is three, that's a 1 out of 3 chance. So make that pool a little deeper.
Yeah.
We want to give you money.
Yep. We want to present somebody with a very special gift of $200 at least in scholarship fund for either a apprenticeship fund, or not apprenticeship necessarily, but a mentorship fund or workshop funds or attending shows. John even alluded to helping someone get into a Bonesai show. And if that's what you want to use your educational funds for, we're all about it. And then to sweeten the deal, John from Joshua Roth has also told me that I can't remember the specific dollar amount, but there will basically be a very well put together amount of Joshua Roth's Japanese forged steel tools that will be presented to the scholarship winner as well. It's an awesome opportunity. You'll be able to up your game, up your Bonesai tools. And I think we'll have some kind of certificate for the little things to mail out to somebody too. So that'll be kind of funny. You can put it on your wall if you want, or you can just think it's kind of cute, put it in a stack of papers on your desk or something. But anyway, so yeah, if you guys are interested in episode 100, we will have the official date of that coming up here soon. I want to make sure that Carmen's travel and where she lands is good before we can do that.
And then
also for Mike, because Mike has certain select days that he can record with us. We're very fortunate when we can get him. So we want to make sure that we can get the whole party involved. So if you guys are patient with us, we might even have to take a few weeks to make sure that episode 100 can land properly. So sounds like a game, right? Fair game?
Oh, yeah. I'm excited.
Cool. Awesome. And then, of course, we have our events coming up. Carmen alluded to, say, Bonesai. Of course, she will be there with Mike as well. We'll be doing little things live. If anyone's interested in participating in that, then that's in real life right there. You could be part of that. And then also talking about next month, you will be at the PBE presenting as well. So.
Yeah, I got a little lecture going on.
Yep. And so one of the things that I guess we'll be looking forward to is that when you're in the show, make sure you snapshot some photos of trees, and we will do our typical shenanigans of critiquing trees.
Oh, yeah.
And giving our very personal opinions, but also our standpoints from different eyes of, you know, our typical critiques. We haven't had a critique episode in a while, so. But yeah, we will get on that for sure. So anyway, any other closing remarks from you, Carmen, for this episode?
No, I don't think so. It's just, it feels like an end of an era, and I'm sad and I'm excited. So
yeah, and it's
cool.
It is. I mean, it is a turning point for you and for the show and for the university and everything. I mean, it's this is only the beginning. So
what's Michael going to do without me? I don't even know. Poor Michael. Know.
All the raccoons and the skunks and the crows just going to have to find
what
their
way. The hell?
So, but no, everything will be fine. So,
yeah.
But anyway, so we're going to close it up here. We're going to name off our patrons real quick, and then we're going to do our typical signing off for this episode. So we go through our patron list. This is a no particular order. I just had to reorganize it for my own sanity. So starting off the list with Wallace Woods Pottery, Bonesai Samurai, Radtron Studio, Kyle Ford, Wesley Thompson, Joseph Dominguez, David Smith, Eddie Fernandez, Myrick Bonesai Pottery, Chantel Wynn, Hist Warrior, Christina Carforia, David J. Bertoncini, Gilbert Jorez, Sean Seaman, Various Bonesai, J.M. Stewart Woodworking, Joshua Roth Limited, Nancy Hoffman, Nate Murray, Ben Crehan, Katrina Ridgway, Timothy Arsenal, Chris Fossoon, J.A.S. Potts, Bonesai Marine, A.C. Castle, Louis Torres, Karen Codswell, Austin Adkins, David N., Chase, Taylor Peacock, Greenwich Gardens, Backyard Bonesai Australia, Justin Knight, Joel Jenkins, Ryan Gorgando. Just gonna leave it there. Snappy Chappers, Joshua Bentley. He's gonna unsubscribe one day, and I just wonder why. Ricky Ruins, Boyd Snellgrove, Vicky Auth, Montana Bridgman, and Mark Melate. are mallets. I think it's mallet. Specimen Best Buds, Unryuin Bonsai Garden in Australia. Thank you, Jay. And of course, Bill Butler, the anchor bonsai specimen best bud. If it wasn't for Bill, I wouldn't be able to hold down all these awesome patrons. Thank you guys so much for supporting as we approach episode 100, our big 10. You guys are awesome, and we really appreciate you guys. And if you guys want more content, you can go over to Underhill Bonsai to check out my stuff. You can look at articles that I wrote. You can go over to YouTube. Underhill Bonsai's YouTube channel is getting an overhaul. We are going through and putting up more videos and fresh videos of me giving Bonsai 101 conversations and presentations. So you can see the first one on how to care for your first bonsai tree. And I have another one coming out. I don't know when exactly when it's out, but it should be out by the time this recording comes out. I do a whole lecture on why bonsai soils are important and what is the makeup and build and each particle, what they do. And then for underhillbonsaistore.com, go check out what we have for sale, of course, and et cetera, et cetera. And for Mike Lane, go over to ketsunebonsai.com. Go check out probably the best well-known Florida man bonsai artist that we know. Thank you, Mike Lane, for being awesome. Go see what Mike's offering. See where he's going to be. He's traveling a good bit next year. And for your content and extra stuff, where do they check you out at?
You can find me on Facebook and Instagram at Becoming Bonsai. And be sure to check out the National Women's Bonsai Group, the Purple Pot Society, working to educate and inspire women to do more bonsai. That's another project I'm really hoping to have more time to work on once the apprenticeship is over. Really get that rolling.
Yep. So. And hopefully we'll see the Purple Pot Society involved in more and more club shows, more and more conventions and stuff like that we've seen like you did in the ABS show. So
yeah.
We can look forward to that. And also not gender specified to support. I'm a supporter of the Purple Pot Society, so please support women and bonsai. So thank you guys so much for listening to episode 96. We are only four episodes away. We're getting really close.
So close.
Yep. So you guys, let us know if y'all are excited for episode 100 and if you guys can make it once I will share the recording date as soon as I can figure out a date, and then we can get everybody together. So you guys have a great week, and we'll hang out with you in the next one.
Bye-bye.